She wore his scent like a second skin. And the wolves knew it before she had crossed a threshold. She had not meant to take it. She had not meant anything, which was, she reflected later, the condition she had managed most successfully in 6 years of service in the Alpha King's lower quarters. She had not meant to be there at all. The delivery had been a routine assignment, the kind the senior herbalists handed her because it required carrying, not thinking, and she was considered suited to the former. She had not meant to pick up her satchel from the table where his riding cloak had been lying for 2 hours. She had not meant to walk 3 leagues through snow with his scent working itself into the wool of her own cloak, slow and thorough as a dye. She had not meant to do any of it. The wolves did not care what she had meant. The snow had been falling for 11 days. The roads from the south had closed on the 7th, and the castle had sealed itself inward in the way of castles, with its hierarchies intact and its distances carefully maintained. The great hall for those who had rank to spend on warmth, the lower quarters for those who kept the place running. Mevrin Tot had lived in the latter since she was 17. She was 23 now, and she had long since stopped calculating the difference. The lower quarters were cold and close, and smelled of tallow and old stone, and she knew every person in them by the sound of their footsteps, which was a kind of knowledge she had found more useful than any other. She worked in the herbary. She was not the herbalist. She was the herbalist's assistant, which in practice meant she was the person who did the work that the herbalist considered beneath her attention. She catalogued compound jars. She restoppered the ones left open on the work table. She noted corrections in the margins of the registers when a formula had been transcribed incorrectly, and she did not sign them, because corrections made by someone of her standing were not corrections. They were impertinences, if claimed. Unsigned. They were simply accurate. She had been doing this for 6 years. She had been good at it from the beginning. The vial had been around her neck for 3 of those years. She had made it herself in her second winter in the herbary, from a formula she had found in the archive while cataloguing a section of compact records that Dern, the archivist, the oldest person in the castle, and the only one who had never once addressed her by her function rather than her name, had let her access on the condition that she handle nothing without gloves. The formula was on the 6th page of a document that had no title. It described a 7-part synthesis, listed the component compounds in a neat column and carried, at the bottom, an annotation that she had copied without fully understanding. Bond stabilizer. For use in mate bond reinforcement during periods of external suppression. She had not known what that meant. She had copied the formula because it was interesting and she had time, and the archive was the warmest room in the North Wing. She had synthesized it over 3 weeks because the compound work was precise, and she liked precision, and she had nothing else to do with her evenings. She wore it because the finished compound smelled of pine and cold iron, and she had always liked the cold. She had called it her bond stabilizer for 3 years. The same way she might have called a smooth stone, she kept in her pocket a worry stone, with the comfortable affection of someone carrying a thing they do not fully understand, but have decided to keep. The wolves had understood it before she did. It started with the youngest ones. The Omega wolves, the ones that ate last and slept nearest the outer door, whose standing in the pack was as low as the standing she occupied in the court, began appearing in the lower corridor where she worked. One at a time, early in the morning before the rest of the castle was awake. At first, she thought it was coincidence. After the 3rd morning, standing very still while a grey yearling pressed its nose to the leather cord at her collar, and then lay down on the flagstones at her feet with the complete certainty of a creature that has located the thing it was looking for, she understood it was not. She told no one. This was not a choice she deliberated over. It was simply the habit of 6 years. Things that happened to Mevrin Tot were not, as a general matter, things that benefited from attention. By the end of the 2nd week, it was not only the young ones. The mid-ranked wolf that stopped her in the East Corridor on a Tuesday morning was a grey-black male she had seen dozens of times from a distance, always moving with the self-contained efficiency of an animal that has earned its position and has nothing left to prove. It had never come within 10 feet of her. It crossed the corridor in 4 steps, stopped directly before her, and lay down at her feet with its chin on her boot. She stood completely still, her hands flat at her sides in the specific way they went, still when she was frightened, motionless, not quite touching the fabric of her dress. And she breathed, and she waited, and after a long moment she looked down at the wolf and said quietly, "I don't know what you think I am." The wolf did not offer an opinion. It appeared to find her boot comfortable. She was still standing there when Seneth found her. The baiter was a large, dark-haired man in his late 30s, who had the particular quality of someone who had seen enough unusual things that unusual things no longer moved him much. He came around the corner of the East Corridor, stopped, looked at the wolf, looked at her, and said nothing for a moment in the way of someone deciding which of several things to say first. "How long?" he said finally. "About 4 minutes," she said. "No," he said. "How long has this been happening?" She considered. 11 days. He looked at the wolf again. The wolf had not moved. Its eyes were closed. "How many?" he said. She counted in her head. 14. As of yesterday, Seneth was quiet for a long time. "The Alpha King should know about this," he said. "I expect he does," she said. "He had?" She learned this later, that Aldrin Varsk, who missed very little of what happened in his own castle, had known about the Pack's mornings in her corridor for nearly a week before Seneth said anything. He had not acted on it. He had, according to Seneth, spent an unusual amount of time in the East Wing for a man who had no announced business there, which was the kind of thing Seneth reported to her with the careful neutrality of someone conveying information, without accompanying a deportorial. She had been in the East Wing when the Alpha King first spoke to her directly. He had passed her in the corridor 3 weeks into the wolves' visitations, going somewhere she did not track, and she had been returning from the archive with her arms full of cataloguing materials, and the strand of hair across her face that she could not move without dropping something. He had stopped. She had stopped. There was 2 feet of stone between them, and the quality of the air in it was different from the quality of the air elsewhere in the corridor. He was 6'4", if he was anything, with the broad-shouldered build of a man for whom size had always been functional rather than impressive. It had simply been what he was, and rooms had adjusted to it, rather than the other way around. His hair was black, pushed back without particular attention. His eyes were the colour of iron in low light, and they caught what available light there was, and held it a beat longer than ordinary eyes tended to. The scar that crossed his left collarbone was visible at the open neck of his tunic, old enough to be silver, earned long before anyone in this castle would have called him by his title. He looked at the strand of hair across her face. He did not ask. He reached out and moved it, tucking it behind her ear with 2 fingers, a motion so brief and precise that by the time she processed it, it was already over, and he was looking at her with the expression of someone who had just done something they had not planned to do and were not going to acknowledge. "How long have you worked in the East Wing?" he said.
6 years, she said. "In the herbary and the lower stores?"
"I didn't know that," he said.
"Most people don't," she said.
There was a beat of silence that had a different quality from the silence that preceded it. "You corrected the compound register," he said, 3 weeks ago, the transcription error in the Coltsfoot entry."
She had not signed it," she said. "The formula was wrong. It would have produced a toxic concentrate."
"I know," he said. "I had it checked." A pause. "You didn't sign it?"
"No."
He looked at her for a moment, not the looking through that she was accustomed to, but the looking at
that was a different and rarer thing. Then he said, I've been in the East Wing more than I should be. Lately, she said carefully. I've noticed. He did not smile. Something in the line of his mouth moved in a direction that was not a smile. And was not one, either, he said. The wolves. Yes, she said. He looked at her for another moment, and in that moment there was no rank between them, which was a strange thing and a real one. Then he said, Be careful with the rogue gathering delivery. The roads east of the mailer drifted. He continued down the corridor. She stood still for longer than she should have. She learned about the shift change from Petra in the lower kitchens, who had seen the roster amended and mentioned it in the way of someone conveying information they found interesting. Meverin stood before the duty board for a long time. The line with her name was in a different hand from all the others, a formal, deliberate hand. The kind of hand that had been trained to be legible across long distances. Her shift now ended before dark instead of after it. She had not asked for this. She had not asked for anything. She stood before the board and looked at the line written in a hand she recognized from the compound register she had corrected, and she thought, 4 months. He had changed the roster 4 months ago. She had not noticed until now. She did not know what to do with that. She put it in the same place. She put the strand of hair in the precise way he had moved it. In the category of things she was carrying, that she did not yet have a name for, it was Dern who gave her the number. She had gone back to the archive on a Tuesday evening, to the section of compact records, to the document with the formula. She had read the margin annotation again, bond stabilizer. For use in mate bond reinforcement during periods of external suppression. She had turned the page, which she had not done in 3 years, and on the seventh page she had found the secondary annotation in a later hand, smaller, more cramped, written in faded brown ink. Do not dispense without the Alpha's written consent. Below this, in the same hand, per compact arrangement, dispensation rights held exclusively by Orof House, Northern Territory, until such time as the compact is dissolved. Then she had gone to find Dern. He was in his usual position at the reading table in the deep archive, surrounded by documents he was annotating with the focused patience of a man who had been doing this for 40 years, and intended to do it for 40 more. He looked up when she entered and set down his quill. I need to ask you something about the compact records, she said. Sit down, he said, which was not something he said to everyone. She sat. She described what she had found. He listened without interrupting, which was also not something he did with everyone. When she finished, he was quiet for a moment, and then he rose and went to the deep shelves and came back with a document she had not seen before. Very old, very large, the parchment yellowed at the edges, the wax seal at the bottom cracked and faded. 400 years, he said, setting it on the table between them, since the last time a rogue pact deferred to someone outside the Alpha bloodline. He set his hand on the document. The last time it happened, the court did not know what to do with it for 3 years. They eventually called her the first Luna of the Northern Accord. There is a portrait of her in the sealed East Gallery that no one has looked at since the current Lord's grandfather had it locked. He looked at Meverin across the document. You understand I am not telling you this because it is comfortable. I understand, she said. The Orath claim to dispensation rights, he said, predates the current compact by 40 years. It was inserted by the third Orof Lord under circumstances the record describes as a consultation, which is the kind of language that tends to indicate the opposite of a consultation. He turned the document to face her. The formula you found is older than their claim. The annotation is in their hand. They knew what they were suppressing. She looked at the document for a long time. Then she looked at the vial at her throat. What does it do? She said. The compound. What does it actually do? It stabilizes a make bond, said Dern. In the presence of a suppressive agent. If a bond has been chemically suppressed through a compound administered to the pack's water supply, or the land's herbs, or, he paused, through a formula distributed under the guise of a beneficial preparations, administered across three generations, the stabilizer counteracts the suppressive element. It allows the bond to function as it was designed to function. Mevrin sat very still. The bond, she said slowly, that has not functioned in 400 years. Approximately 403, said Dern. Yes. She looked at the vial. She looked at the document. She thought about 37 wolves lying down in her corridor, one by one, earliest in the morning. She thought about the alpha male presenting himself at the Hervery door on a Wednesday and lying under her table for 4 hours while she worked. The impossible become routine in the way that impossible things do when they happen every day. I made this compound 3 years ago, she said, from this formula. Yes, said Dern, I know. I saw you copy it. A pause. I thought it best to let you find the rest on your own. She was quiet for a moment. That was not particularly kind of you, she said. No, he said, without apology, but it was correct. She went back to the herbary, and she sat with the open vial in her hand and the archive document in her lap, and she thought about the name in the margin. Orath. And about a delivery assignment she had been given that morning. Routine, the kind of assignment she had done 3 times before. 3 leagues east to the rogue gathering hall where the packs held their neutral meetings, and she thought, the scent is already in the wool. And then she thought, I know what I have. She had not yet decided what to do with it. She set out the next morning in the snow. The road east of the mill was drifted, as he had said it would be. She walked through it. Her boots filled with snow at the left heel where the seam had split, and she had not repaired it, and the cold got into the foot slowly in the way that cold gets into split seams, unrushed, certain of its welcome. She thought about the document. She thought about the name in the margin. She thought about Lady Vane Orath, who had arrived at the castle 4 days ago with a retinue and a sealed treaty and the particular composed certainty of someone who has never needed to exert themselves to be formidable. Lady Vane had addressed her once in the doorway of the lower herbary stores. She had not entered. She had stood at the threshold and addressed Mevrin by her function and asked with the precise courtesy of someone who has never needed to be rude, to be dangerous, whether the herbalist's girl understood the nature of what she had stumbled into. Mevrin had said, she was still working that out. Lady Vane had looked at her for a moment, not the looking through, the looking at, the kind of recalibration that means someone has moved you from one category to another, less comfortable one. Then she had turned and walked back down the corridor without another word. She was still thinking about that when she crossed the threshold of the rogue gathering hall, and the first wolf lowered its head, then the second. Then in a long, slow ripple from the far wall toward the entrance, like a tide moving against the wind, unhurried and absolute, all of them. She had stopped counting at 30. They were large, and they were small, old pack animals and young. Wolves she recognized from Olgin's pack and others she had never seen, every single one of them. Heads on the rushes, bodies prostrate, the complete and ancient and deeply improbable deference of a thing that had not happened in 400 years, happening now in a cold stone hall 3 leagues from the castle, because a woman who kept compound records had inadvertently carried the right scent into the right room. The hall was very quiet. The humans in the hall, pack attendants, bonded riders, a handful of minor lords who used the rogue gathering as a neutral space for discussions they did not want, witnessed in a capital court, were looking at her with an expression she had no category for. Not alarm, not reverence, the expression of people witnessing something so far outside their experience of the world that they had not yet produced a response to it. The rogue Alpha, a large, scarred man whose authority had been built entirely through challenge, and who was therefore deeply unaccustomed to the sensation of being the least relevant power in a room, was standing. He had not intended to stand. She could see that in him. His wolf was on the floor behind him, and he was looking at it, and then looking at her, and his face was doing something she did not think it knew how to do. She made the delivery. She set the compound crate on the table and signed the receipt, and she did not look at any of the wolves or the people, and she walked back out into the snow. She saw him before he saw her, which was uncommon. He was not a man who was often seen before he chose to be. He was on horseback at the gate, his dark riding cloak open despite the cold, and he was very still in the specific way he had been still in the East Corridor, the stillness of someone who has been in one place for longer than they intended, and is not yet ready to account for. Why? He watched her come in through the gate. She watched him watch her. "I told you the roads were drifted," he said. "They were," she agreed. He looked at her. The boot with the split seam, the snow damp at her hem, the strand of hair the wind had undone from her practical knot. He looked at the vial at her collar. He did not ask about it, which meant he knew about it, which meant Senith had been thorough. "Come inside," he said. She went inside. Lady Vane's formal documentation was presented to the council 2 days later. The treaty was sealed, witnessed, and unambiguous. The relevant clause had been drafted by Aldrin's father and Lady Vane's father in the 23rd year of the Northern Compact, in language that had the specific precision of something constructed to be difficult to argue with. The claim was not a marriage contract. It was older, and in some ways more absolute, a bond arrangement under compact law, with the force of institutional agreement behind it, and 40 years of the Orath family's careful maintenance of the relevant conditions, ensuring it remained uncontested. Lady Vane presented it with no visible satisfaction. Satisfaction was not the expression. The expression was simply certainty, the certainty of someone who has placed a piece precisely and is waiting, without particular anxiety, for the board to acknowledge it. Mevrin stood at the back of the council chamber and looked at the document. She had the archive formula folded inside her dress. She had been carrying it since the night in the archive. She looked at Aldrin, who was seated at the head of the council table. His face gave away nothing. He was good at that. The particular blankness of authority, the trained absence of readable feeling in a public space. But she had stood close enough to him in a corridor to know the difference between blankness and management, and what she saw now was management, a man holding something carefully in both hands and choosing not to show the effort. She left the council chamber. She went to the archive. She found Dern. She said, "I need the original document, the full text. I need it before the council reconvenes tomorrow morning." He looked at her for a moment. Then he said, "I thought you might," and went to get it. She spent the night in the archive. Dern stayed with her for the first 3 hours and then went to bed, because he was 81 years old and had the pragmatism of someone who has learned to conserve his resources. She worked by candlelight until the candles guttered, and she replaced them and worked by the new ones. She read the original formula document from beginning to end for the first time. She read the Orath family notation in full. She read the secondary documents Dern had pulled for her, the dispensation records, the compact amendments, the synthesis logs maintained by the Orath house and filed with the compact authority every decade for 400 years. The logs were meticulous. The Orath family had been meticulous. The suppression compound had been distributed through the castle's fresh herb supply every 3rd year, under the guise of a general beneficial preparation, for 12 consecutive generations. The Makebon had not completed in the Alpha King's line in 400 years. and no one had questioned it, because it had happened so gradually, because it had been so carefully maintained, because the family who stood to benefit most had also been the family responsible for keeping the relevant records. Except for the records in the deep archive which Dern had let her find, she understood then what he had meant by correct. She folded the documents. She uncapped the vial. She held it for a moment in the archive candlelight, the silver-grey liquid moving gently. And she thought about the wolf at her feet on the corridor flagstones. Its eyes closed, its heavy head trusting her boot. She thought about 37 wolves on the floor of a cold stone hall. In a deference 400 years dormant. She had been invisible for 6 years. She had been careful, and she had been competent, and she had been overlooked, and she had made a kind of careful peace with that, the peace of someone who has decided that invisibility has its uses and does not require an apology. She had not wanted to be seen. She had not wanted to walk into rooms and have rooms adjust to her presence. She had wanted, very simply, to do her work correctly and not be punished for it. She looked at the documents in her hand. She thought about Lady Vane standing in the doorway of the Lower Herbury Stores, not entering. Addressing her by her function, she thought, I am not stumbling into anything. I know exactly what I have. She walked into the council chamber the next morning, carrying nothing but the open vial and the archive document she had folded inside her dress. The council had not yet reconvened fully. There were 7 of them present, including the head of chamber and Senate, who was there in his capacity as the Alpha King's representative, and Lady Vane, who was seated at the far end of the table with the patience of someone who does not need to arrive early, because the outcome is already secured. Aldrin was not there. Mavrin set the open vial on the table. The silver-grey liquid caught the chandelier light and held it. She set it down in the silence before anyone asked her to speak, and she said, The compound in this vial was synthesized from a formula recorded in this archive 403 years ago. The family name and the margin of the original is Orath. She placed the folded document on the table beside the vial. The same family has filed synthesis logs with the compact authority every decade since that date, maintaining a suppression compound distributed through this castle's herb supply. The formula you are looking at is the counteractive agent, my lords. She looked at the council members, and then, briefly, at Lady Vane, whose expression had undergone a very controlled, very small change around the eyes. I believe you will want to read it. The chamber was quiet for a moment. Then the head of chamber reached for the document. It took 3 days. There was a secondary synthesis test, commissioned by Aldrin, and conducted by the head herbalist, who confirmed both the composition of the vial's compound and the presence of suppressive residue in the castle's stored herb supply. There was a formal review of the Orath dispensation records. There was a council session she was not present for, and a second session she was asked to attend, during which she answered questions about the archive document with the same steady precision she brought to compound corrections, not performing, not managing, simply accurate. Aldrin was present at the second session. He sat at the head of the table, and he watched her answer questions. And he did not speak. She did not look at him directly. She was aware of him the way she had been aware of him in the East Corridor, the particular quality of his attention, the weight of a room that has adjusted itself around a presence. The ruling came on the 4th day. The treaty clause was reviewed, the Orath dispensation records examined against the archival evidence, and the head of chamber read the finding in the specific language of institutional decision. The compact clause was null and void. The dispensation arrangement was struck from record. The suppression compound had been administered without the Alpha's knowledge or consent, and the mate bond had been prevented from completing in the Alpha line for 12 consecutive generations, a determination that rendered the treaty arrangement structurally fraudulent, under compact law. Lady Vane stood before the table and heard the ruling read. She stood correctly, spine level, hands folded, expression composed, and only at the very edges of the expression, only in the specific tightening around her eyes that she could not fully manage, was there anything that looked like fear. Not defiance, not anger, fear, controlled, barely visible, present. She departed the castle the following morning. She did not raise her voice. Aldrin found Mevrin in the archive passage afterward, after the council had dispersed, after Senith had made several careful and diplomatic comments about procedural precedent, after the castle had returned to the business of its own administration. He was leaning against the stone wall of the passage with his head back and his eyes closed, which was not the posture of a king in a throne room. It was the posture of a man who had been managing something very heavy for a very long time and had, for this precise moment, set it down. She stopped. He opened his eyes and looked at her. "You found the document 3 years ago," he said. "The formula," she said. "I didn't find the full context until last week, but you kept it. I liked the smell," she said. Something moved in him through the jaw, through the line of his shoulders, that was not quite a laugh but occupied the same space one might have. He pushed off the wall and crossed the passage and put his forehead against hers, and she felt him exhale, slow and deliberate, like a man setting something heavy down, and she put her hand against his chest and felt his heartbeat under her palm, steadier than she would have expected, or perhaps exactly as steady as she should have. Neither of them spoke. The passage was cold and dim and quiet, and the single torch in the bracket above them threw amber light on both their faces, and she thought, "I have been carrying something for 3 years, and I did not know what it was." She thought, perhaps that is the nature of things worth carrying. She did not move her hand from his chest. He did not move his forehead from hers. They stayed that way for a long time, and no one interrupted them, and that was its own kind of gift. 3 weeks later, the castle had not entirely restructured itself. There were still council members who did not know what to do with her, who looked at her in corridors with the particular expression of people recalibrating a category they had been certain about. There were still mornings when the kitchens fell briefly quiet as she passed through. There were still the small daily frictions of a hierarchy adjusting to something it had not anticipated and was not entirely sure how to accommodate. She found this less uncomfortable than she had expected. The hierarchy's discomfort was, she had decided, the hierarchy's to manage. She had work to do. The vial sat open on a small stand on her herbary work table now. She had taken the cord off 3 weeks ago, not with ceremony, simply because the cord had become unnecessary. It was a compound jar now, one among others, distinguished only by the faint silver colour of its contents, and the fact that it smelled of pine and cold iron and, very faintly, of a scent that was not hers. The alpha male wolf came every morning. She did not know when this had become a routine rather than an anomaly. Sometime in the second week after the ruling, she thought, though she had not tracked the transition carefully. It arrived at the herbary door at approximately the same time each day, and waited. And she opened the door, and it came in and lay under the work table for the duration of her morning work. And when she left, it rose and went back to wherever the pack spent its days. This was the impossible thing, become ordinary. She had stopped remarking on it. Aldrin came to the herbary on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and sometimes Saturdays, which was not an announced schedule and had never been discussed. "He came without ceremony, without particular purpose," he stated aloud. He stood in the herbary and told her things, the state of the northern roads which were still clearing from the winter, the outcome of the Eastern Council session which had gone better than he had expected, the detail of a decision about the compact records he had not yet announced, in the specific. Matter-of-fact way of someone for whom offering information is a form of intimacy they have not found another word for. She had come to understand this. He did not say, I am choosing to be here. He said, The Eastern Council has agreed to open the Aroth dispensation files for independent review, he said. The Deep Archive will be reclassified as public record. He said, The northern roads will be passable by the third week of next month, or so his scouts indicate, though his scouts had been wrong about the roads before. She listened. She handed him things to hold when her hands were occupied. He held them without complaint, without examining them or asking what they were for, which she had come to find oddly steadying, the quality of someone who is content to be useful, without requiring it to mean something. One morning, in the fourth week, she asked him about the shift change. He was holding a small compound jar and looking at the wolf, under the table, and she said, without looking up from her work, The duty roster. The shift you changed. 4 months ago. A pause. I only noticed last week he was quiet for a moment. I didn't like the idea of you walking back through the outer yard after dark, he said. The north gate latches poorly. It has for years. That was 4 months ago, she said. I'm aware of that, he said. She was quiet, too, for a moment. She looked at her hands. She thought about 6 years of careful invisibility, 6 years of not claiming corrections she had made, and not asking for shifts she should have had, and not signing her name to anything. And she thought about the specific and unexpected weight of being noticed, not by the wolves, not by the ancient pack recognition, but by a man who had remembered, 4 months ago and without announcement, that the north gate latched poorly, and she walked back through it after dark. She put down the jar she was holding. She turned to face him. He was already looking at her. He had set down the compound jar. His dark grey eyes held the same quality they had in the east corridor. The looking at, not the looking through. And something underneath it that cost him something to allow to be visible. I should have noticed sooner, he said. The shift and the rest of it. You are managing a great deal, she said. That isn't an excuse, he said. It's a fact. The excuse would be worse. She looked at him for a moment. 6 years is a long time to be invisible, she said. You didn't see me? No, he said. I didn't? A pause. I see you now. He kissed her once, carefully, the way someone keeps a promise, slowly, as if he had thought about how to do it without frightening her, and decided that slowly was the answer. It was brief, and it was specific, and it contained everything that had not been said in East corridors and archive passages and herbary mornings. And when it was done, she stayed where she was, and did not move away, and he did not move back. And the wolf's tail moved once against the stone floor, a slow, unhurried sweep. Outside the window, the snow was still falling, lighter now, the kind of snow that falls in the last weeks of winter, when the season is not yet done but has begun to tire of itself. The vial sat open on the stand on the work table, its silver-grey compound catching the pale winter morning light, unremarkable among the other jars. The wolf breathed slowly under the table. The castle went about its business around them, adjusting as castles do, slowly, with the particular reluctance of large institutions for anything they have not anticipated. And this was simply how mornings were now. She had not meant for any of it to happen. The wolves had not cared what she meant. Neither, in the end, had she. If you could carry something for years without understanding what it was, and discover all at once that it had been waiting to be what it always was, would you have put it down or kept walking? Let me know in the comments below. I read every single one until next time.